Disclaimer. The views and opinions that you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live most Thursdays, 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time on YouTube. Check out my Twitter feed, ANNZAG, for more. Enjoy the show! Welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Bargy. Jacob's here.
Hey, folks.
Lindsay is here. She's in the box up here.
Hey, everybody.
Right here is Lindsay Leverage. She is the interest editor at Anime News Network. Lindsay, thanks so much for coming on the show again.
Yeah, no problem. Great to be here.
Yeah. It's May the 4th, 2017. I don't know what the fuck I'm smiling about. Anyway.
But may the 4th be with you.
Oh, yes. Star Wars.
AT-STs.
Yeah.
Mon Mothma.
I got to say something. On this show, speaking of which, so thanks everyone for coming by. Thanks to the live chat. We're expecting a low turnout today because it's May the 4th, 2017. And also Guardians of the Galaxy 2, like, started right now. Like, right now.
At this very moment.
Yeah, at this very minute, people are watching that 2.5 hour long commercial for consumer goods.
Yes.
And
Chris Pratt probably has his shirt off.
We'll be seeing it on Saturday and probably complaining about it afterward. Anyway, so that's kind of what's happening today. But this is a low-key show, lightweight. I'm not going to get into anything too serious here. I have collected some questions from our neglected email mailbag, which, speaking of which, if you have questions for Ancast and don't want to use Twitter, send them to Zach@AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Like, once every 10 years, I will collect them all together and we will answer them. Anyway, let's get to some of these questions. Actually, before we do that, Lindsay, we have not had you on the show in a little while. What are you watching for spring, and like, what's your favorite thing for spring?
Okay, favorite thing for spring. Attack on Titan, man.
What an original
answer.
Waiting
on that for
anyway, let's get on to the questions. Go on.
So, tuning into every episode with anticipation, and it's good to have like a weekly show again. To at the end of each episode, you're just hyped for the next one, like. When's it?
Right.
I haven't read the manga either, so it's still surprising to me. I don't know what's coming. I know a couple of spoilers because I caved probably after year three. I just, you know,
right.
After
waiting
that long, I needed to know a few things. But I didn't read extensive spoilers, so it's still a fun ride for me. Mm-hmm.
Those spoilers are now old enough to, like, have plastic toys and shit like that.
They're
toddler age, so it's hard to avoid them.
Right.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Other than that, I am hate watching Anonymous Noise. I don't know if either of you are watching that. It is a shoujo train wreck, and it is hilarious. They spend the whole first episode. Anyone who read Preview Guide probably got the gist of it, but they spend the first episode just sort of having the protagonist like sing constantly, just this la 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 la. There's no like lyrics. Her breaking out into that, and they
also
go straight into the second episode with Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, literally singing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star every 10 minutes.
And it's
yes, yeah.
Also,
yeah, I feel like I could sing it in Japanese now if you asked me to, but it's awful, but. It's funny awful.
All right. Well, funny awful is a thing, you know.
That
can be worth watching.
I saw only the first episode. I've heard bad things, but I saw only the first episode, and I thought it was one of the most like baffling and bad shoujo shows that I had.
What is the premise of Anonymous Noise? Remind me, because I feel like I read it once and was like, what the fuck? And then now I can't remember.
Well, it's this teenage girl who like lives in an abusive home, but they don't like detail exactly what it is. I guess her parents are just neglectful. Like it's just vagaries. It's just teenage angst vagaries where she's like sad and lonely, and her only friend is this boy who lives across from her, and they like they form a bond by singing. And Weta, by the way, have a show that revolves entirely around this girl can only express herself through singing, and then cast an actress who cannot sing at all. Like, that
is
was
that
a
what's up?
Yeah, that was a bad idea on their part. And
say so.
And but anyway, so he moves away, and then she becomes so distraught that he moved away that she keeps a surgical mask over her mouth at all times and never talks except when she takes it off and sings really loud. And it's just this overwrought fucking melodramatic. And then there's this other boy who is like, oh, your voice is the most perfect voice I've ever heard. I want to write songs for you. And he, because of some other past trauma in his life, he can't sing. Like, he can speak perfectly normally, but like when he tries to sing it, that just comes out because that's, I guess, how trauma works. It's just stupid. But like there's basically no animation in it at all. In the first episode, there was just no animation whatsoever. And then it, I've heard it got worse. So
her thrashing around, like holding her hands on her head while singing.
I mean, I have to make animated GIFs of that show, so I have to like skip around in it sometimes. It looks awful.
Yeah, I haven't seen the shoujo that bad in, well, I mean, like, you know, that's not fair because I didn't like watch further into it, but the first episode I was expecting to watch, like, I was expecting to follow along with it. I like watching bad shoujo, but it was just so like boring and confusing and like badly animated that I was like, I can't even sit through this, which apparently most of our readers felt the same way because it was not voted in for daily streaming.
Yeah. Didn't make it.
It was just like, man, a shoujo series is bad when it doesn't make that threshold. You know?
Yeah. I mean, shoujo usually has kind of an easier time making it on our poll.
Yeah.
Like, typically it'll get voted in.
Because there are only so few shows per season that people like. Right. Well, the one like shoujo romance we get, people are going to want to follow it, like, even if it's not a lot of people. But this was so bad that it couldn't even make it in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, Anonymous Noise, you'll have to let us know how it turns out in the end.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last episode will be beautifully animated.
Mm-hmm.
All right, man, let's get to some of these mailbox questions. We got a few of them. These are all pretty easygoing, so it'll be good.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Ancast, I guess I think these are going into sending orders. We got like three of them about last week's, when we talked about the olden days.
Oh, yeah,
we
right.
We got three questions about that. So if you wanted to hear more about that shit, buckle up. All right. Ancast, I saw, dear Ancast, I saw a meme go around recently where you're supposed to tell people what your first AOL Instant Messenger screen name was. It reminded me that mine was anime-related, something like Vash the Donuts. That sounds like an AM. That sounds like an AOL screen name
right.
to me. God, what was the donuts thing? Oh, he, like, eats donuts
once.
Yeah.
And everybody latched on.
And there's a soundtrack called that.
Yes, the soundtrack is called that.
I want to know if you guys ever had embarrassing anime-related IRC or Instant Messenger screen names, if you remembered them. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had a few. I still have crappy screen names. I have bad screen names when I come up with them. They're not good. But in the earliest days, I remember my first Instant Messenger screen name was R.N.O. Kenshin.
Subtle.
I think I thought the Japanese title of the show was Rurouni no Kenshin, which it is not.
No, it isn't.
Which is why that name is like that. Because I didn't know what the fuck I was talking about. I was 15, anyway. Lindsay, do you have any?
So early AOL adopter in our house.
Yeah.
And my first one was Princess Jupe, because you only got so many letters. So I think it was actually PRNCESS.
Oh, okay.
JUP. And then I remember AOL expanded and you could have more letters. And so then it just went to Princess, spelled correctly, Jupe, which was a reference to Jupiter from Sailor Moon.
Why
and,
did you finish spelling out Princess but not Jupiter?
Right.
That's the answer. Right.
Exactly.
And then I also had like my super Japanese one that I had after that was Neogen Zuisho, which is the name Japanese name for the silver crystal from Sailor Moon. So
Lindsay.
Yeah, I also had Kabit Roko from Tenchi Muyo, and I had like multiple screen names because I used to send out AOL anime related newsletter emails that with embedded images about
look at you now.
When I was in middle school, so I had a lot of subscribers, believe it or not. And I had a Tenchi-related one and I had Sailor Moon-related ones, and I would hop back and forth between screen names depending on which newsletter I was sending out.
Did you ever, like, oh, fuck, wrong account, like, accidentally send out the Tenchi screen, Tenchi newsletter under the Sailor Moon screen name?
No, no, I didn't. I also used to make anime music videos under those screen names, too. And I've never been able to find any of the ones I made. They were
fantastic. Oh, okay,
fantastic.
I was about to say, we gotta see them.
I made, like, a Sailor Uranus one to Superman by Five for Fighting.
You made an anime music video to Five for Fighting Superman?
Yeah,
half a million other people.
Yes.
Like, that was like the most. Yeah. Every anime.
That
music
and
video.
Evanescence. Evanescence and Linkin Park.
And Linkin Park, yeah. But that song, Five for Fighting. That's great. I applaud you.
I had a really good comedic one that was Luna and Artemis to that Weird Al Yankovic song that was about like cat being in the Chinese food. I don't remember how it goes.
Yeah. I remember what you're talking
about. Somewhere, these are on the internet.
Well, I made AMVs to, like, Enya and Josh Groban, so it could always be worse.
My AMVs were to ambient techno. Like, I was just cutting to the beat.
Right.
Which, I was basically making ADV trailers. Mm-hmm. It was not that much creativity. I made my anime music videos on VHS, though. Like, I would edit tape together that way. Which meant at the end product was like fourth generation or something like that, because you're cutting...
It's just squares.
You need two of the same tape, and you're cutting... Yeah, anyway.
It's just squares. Yeah. Blurry squares.
It's just, yeah.
I made mine while on dial-up, so I remember trying to download clips from shows that were like 3 megabytes, and it would take 30 minutes to do it, and, you know, I was pretty proud of my, like... Because I couldn't rip anything myself, but...
I had this really crappy consumer-level thing that was for ripping video from VHS. I think it was called a Dazzle. And it was like this giant thing that you plug into the I.O. port on the back of your computer. And it has like a ribbon cable and shit. And you like plug the component plugs of the VCR. It was...
I used that to make my first... So my first AMV was to... So I was way more into... this, and this is true of my screen name too. I was way more into video games than I was... into anime for most of my early teens.
What
so
reversal.
Yeah, I gaming community wasn't as welcoming. I can't imagine why. And but like my first AMV was to Wind Waker, but specifically it was I played through the game and taped all of it, and then I used the Dazzle to get that off of a VCR tape.
So and then that, you edited a music video.
And then I edited
Wind Waker to Josh Groban.
No, to Enya. But yeah,
that's good.
So no, but my first screen name, and on that note, was the only anime related one I have is one that people probably know because that's the one I got known for or whatever. But before that, the first like screen name that I used with much prolificness was Star Fox with 2 R's and 2 X's.
So that's like
Star Fox,
a furry triple X name.
Well, but I wasn't like, a furry. It wasn't
like
a furry
in a
board.
Vinyl suit somewhere.
Right. I just really like Star Fox. I really like Star Fox 64, and I liked adding the extra letter. But I think I didn't even know what furries were back then, actually, because I was 13 or so.
Sure.
So thinking now, I'd be like, oh man, that is like a furry name. But I. Yeah, I don't think I knew what furries were at age 12 or 13.
Yeah,
so.
Like if I saw that screen name, I would just assume, oh, furry.
Right.
You know, which
so you guys
is
are
fine.
Like,
I'm just saying.
Well, the pictures,
lucky
so,
that
so my avatars.
I had a friend who was really into Sonic. When
two
I was
X's in
went
anything.
To an art school, and she drew Sonic 4 when we were like 13, 14. So yeah. She was tapped into that, which means that I was tapped into that.
You know what? She was ahead of her time.
Right.
She was. Yeah.
Well, so, but it was balanced out with, like, you would think, okay, so, like, you see that screen name and you're right, you think, like, DeviantArt Furry, but, like, my avatars and stuff like that were either, were all, like, weird, distorted, like, stupid meme faces from Lord of the Rings or the Angry Beavers. So the avatar was always, like, a goony-ass, like, sort of a something awful level, like, ugly face. But the Nick was Star Fox, so it was sort of a weird juxtaposition, really.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Yeah, so definitely had those. I can't really remember any of the other ones, but I remember the Kenshin one. All right. Zach and Jacob, I've been to a couple anime conventions this year, and I've noticed a general decline in the amount of non-anime programming, like My Little Pony, Adventure Time, Super Hulock, etc. And I wanted to know if you saw the same thing in your travels. Love the show. Thanks. Thank you. That's from Dan. Non-anime programming. Yeah, mm-hmm. I have noticed a pretty sincere decline in the amount of it. And what I think it's just because there isn't anything adjacent that is still popular. Homestuck isn't popular anymore. Mm-hmm. My Little Pony isn't all that popular anymore. Super Hulock is fading.
Well, didn't it?
All of that stuff is fading. Like, it stayed popular for, like, 2 years, and that stuff was popular, like, 2 years ago. Not last year. Like, two or three years ago.
I have to say, too.
Homestuck's, like, four years ago at this
point. That's lowballing it. It's more than that.
So, like, there just isn't anything on the periphery of anime fandom that's popular right now. That might change. Steven Universe was a thing, and you saw a few panels, and a few core panels, and some cosplay and stuff. But it's just, it comes and goes in waves in terms of, like, what's popular right now. So, like, there might be something else later this year, or next year, or whatever.
But yeah, there's not a lot of, like, this isn't anime honing in on anime con spaces right now, right this very moment. But
Overwatch.
Like, the next thing hasn't really, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but do you see, like, you see a lot of cosplay, but do you see, like...
There's no panels.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Because what are you going to talk about?
Overwatch?
Yeah.
Just not an anime con. You wouldn't do that at an anime con. Yeah, it definitely, like, I've noticed a sharp drop-off, but I don't think that's like, oh, convention culture is changing, and now it's going to be... No, it's just that there isn't anything... Like, I bet they wish there was some sort of external thing.
Yeah, people mentioned Voltron. Because
it brings in a lot of people.
People mentioned Voltron, and that's still not big enough. Like, that's smaller than Steven Universe fandom has shrunk, and it's still bigger than, like, Voltron fandom. Like, it's still... It's, like, when the Super Hulock and Brony stuff was big, it was, like, pushing into... They would be 3-4 panels at an anime convention about that stuff. And it was like, but this doesn't have anything to do with anime, you know.
Yeah.
There's not that overlap anymore.
Yeah.
And the Homestucks, oh God, so much gray in every bathroom.
Yeah, I don't miss the Homestucks at all.
No.
Like, and it wasn't that they were, like, annoying kids or anything, but they were covered in gray paint.
Yeah, that was the entire problem. It's like
I have t-shirts fandom with, like, wise, gray stains on them and stuff because I bumped up against
fandom-wise, if you weren't part of it, they weren't outwardly annoying any more than any other fandom. But, oh my God, like, you brush up against one.
Yeah.
Guys.
And they were, like... Like, I have this very vivid memory of standing at the Homestuck gathering at Anime Expo or walking past it, and it was just this mob of people taking over this enormous staircase.
Yeah.
Had to have been
gray.
500 people.
And what's funny is I found out later, I think the angriest I ever was at Homestuck fandom was when I found out that those trolls, those gray trolls, are only four... Don't stone me if I'm wrong, but approximately four characters out of a cast of, like, 30 or something who are not... gray painted, they're just normal, and I was like, what? So you could cosplay as those, and people did cosplay as those other things, you just didn't recognize it as Homestuck, but I'm like, you could cosplay as these things that aren't painted, and everybody picked the gray paint. It is so angry. Anyway.
Those were the characters, those characters are what made Homestuck blow up, because it ran for years before he introduced those characters, and those characters were what made it explode. To this day, I have not read a single page of Homestuck and have no fucking idea what it's about or who those characters are or what those symbols mean. I know Homestuck when I see it because I've seen so much of it. But if you ask me what the fuck it was about, I don't know.
I read the entire first arc in preparation for a thing years ago that was related for ANN content. And I read through the entire first story arc, if you will. And the biggest thing that I got from it is, oh, so that's what Tumblr language pulls from. Like, you know, when people talk about, like, the whole, I can't even cite stuff anymore because it's out of date. Tumblr isn't big enough.
No, Tumblr, speaking of another thing.
But you know how when there were nested posts and stuff like that, people would, like, use all caps. Okay, so let me tell you about, and that sort of thing. And it would be, like, or all caps, or there would be, like, it me. It wasn't it me, because that's now, and that comes from Twitter. But, like, there would be certain types of responses that are customary for Tumblr language to use.
It me's from Twitter? I thought that was Tumblr.
I mean, that's the thing. Stuff that originated on Tumblr. It's all stuff that's, yeah, yo dudes and stuff like that. All that stuff originated from Tumblr, and it is 100% just adapted from how people chat with each other in Homestuck. And it had a huge impact on how people write, like, sort of cute tweet indie chat log stuff. Like, 1,000% all that stuff came from Homestuck. Like, Andrew Hussey, like, distilled how people talk and disseminated in a way that everybody copied, like, ironically. Anyway, that was the biggest thing that struck me about it. Everything else, like, whatever. It's just super convoluted adventure game, pseudo-adventure game type thing. It's not very... It's hard to remember what happens in it. Anyway.
I'm having a bit of a crisis, because now I'm realizing that things that I've adopted into my everyday language that I've taken from social media shorthand might be from Homestuck, and I've also never ever read it, and that's kind of a weird feeling.
Right, where it's, yeah, it's one of those things that stuff, like, evolves and mutates and shifts around and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just not popular anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it'll ever, I mean, maybe there'll be nostalgia, but that'll be brief, because it was brief, Homestuck was brief.
Right.
Let's see here.
And it's very inaccessible.
I feel like we've answered something like this before. Hey, Ancast, you guys talk a lot about Kunihiko Ikuhara. We do. Jacob's reviewing Utena on the site. You are.
I am.
Although this week's is going to be a little late.
It'll be tomorrow.
It'll be up to tomorrow. Today's Thursday.
24-hour delay.
You'll see it on Friday by the time you see this. Okay, I wanted to know, of all of his projects, which is your favorite? Sailor Moon, Utena, Penguin Drum, or Yurikuma Arashi? For the record, my favorite is Yurikuma. Thanks if you answer this, Samantha. Samantha's favorite is Yurikuma.
Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite, Jacob?
I honestly, I gun to my head, I couldn't pick between the three. I vacillated, but
they're all my precious children. My precious cinnamon roll children.
No. I mean, I find it, apart from Sailor Moon, which I don't have much affection for, I don't think I even saw very much of the stuff that he did for Sailor Moon. Maybe I would love it just as much. I don't know. Probably not, because it's a little more compromised. But of all the, like, basically uncompromised projects that he's done, not that there wasn't compromise there, but for the most part, you can tell, like, they kind of let him do what he wanted, which is why he only has three works in, like, 20 years.
yeah.
But, like, I think they're all stone-cold masterpieces, and I can't pick. I'm like, oh, people bag on Yurikuma a little more for various reasons. I've seen people bag on it for reasons that don't even coincide. Like, they're just completely different criticisms that are all perfectly valid of it. But I like revisited it, I don't know, 6 or 7 months ago. And I was like, no, I still, like, I understand what you're saying, but I still love this very deeply. Like, it made me cry. It was very powerful. I can't really pick between the three of them. I think they're all basically perfect in their own completely different ways, so it's hard for me to say. I really like that guy's work, so I think that's just a matter of I just happen to be in tune with how he likes to make things.
Yeah. Lindsay, what's your what are your feelings?
Okay, so obviously I have a personal connection with Sailor Moon. I credit it for a lot of stuff, including working at ANN. But as far as Ikuhara, the S season was pretty formative for me as far as Haruka, Michiru, and T had a lot, I think, to do with their interplay with each other and the writing of their characters. But Utena is probably my favorite. I really like Penguin Drum. I like Penguin Drum a lot. Yurikuma didn't work for me for a lot of reasons, but Penguin Drum was, I also found a little hard to distill at some points, but I still really appreciate what it was trying to say. But overall, Utena, I think, had the biggest impact on me. There's nothing about it. I can't think of any complaints about it, actually. I know a lot of people don't like the Black Rose arc, but I can still appreciate what it was doing there, too, and the symbolism in that arc as well. So for me, it's hands down, Utena for sure.
Mm-hmm. That Black Rose arc, I think that's actually my favorite part of the show, and that's Yoji and Okito. Like, that's the part where Ikuhara was like, okay, you take your slightly different sensibilities for this, like, the weird arc in the middle. Which led me to check out a lot more of Yoji and Okito's work, and it, you know, that guy, like, for those who don't know, eventually made Star Driver and Captain Earth, and so incomprehensible. Like, he did some good stuff, but over time, like, I will
so
say,
beloved classic.
20 years later, Ikuhara makes Yurikuma, and 20 years later, Enokido makes Captain Earth. Like, you know, one
Divisive
of these people
shows that didn't sell. Well, I don't know what the difference is.
One of them's comprehensible. One of them is comprehensible, and the other one is incomprehensible. Is my take? It was
They're basically
what I meant.
The same.
But I meant, like, you know, as contemporaries, it's interesting to see the slight differences between them. For what it's worth, so Enokido wanted to use guns instead of swords. Like the metaphor, where they fight for the Rose Bride with swords. Enokido pushed for guns, And ultimately, it was Ikuhara wanted swords, Inokito wanted guns, and ultimately it was the sponsors who said, oh, no guns in the show, that could be dodgy. But we very easily could have had Utano with guns, just so you know, which is fun. The things I found out in my research during those reviews.
They wouldn't have been able to stretch those duels.
Well, that's the other thing, is Ikuhara, his remark on that was, in retrospect, he said, well, I think swords work better for the storytelling, the metaphors that I was going for. Guns would have been so much easier to animate, so I am kicking myself for that one. And he said, in the future, and this was an interview that was done back before Penguin Drum and Yurikuma were made, he said, in the future, I will only use guns. Yurikuma and Penguin Drum both heavily feature, like, as the metaphor for, you know, the soul's voice or whatever, guns, big old rifles. So he was true to his word, you know.
He was serious.
I can animate these, you know. Swords are too hard to animate.
My favorite thing of his is the Utena movie specifically. It's pretty much a distillation of all of his best stuff, but with better animation than usual. And I like the way that movie looks. Like, the aesthetic in it is better, I think, than a lot of his other stuff. Mm-hmm. I prefer the look of that to Penguin Drum, which... Penguin Drum was just in every way too much for me. And I have not watched all of Yurikuma Arashi.
Right.
So that movie, though, is like my all-time favorite animated film, like mm-hmm. animated movie. That mm-hmm. movie, I think, is pretty much my favorite. Mm-hmm. You know, next to like Princess Mononoke and stuff like that, but like that movie is mm-hmm. the best. Are you going to cover that, by the way, for the daily streaming?
I mean, it's not available streaming anywhere, so...
Yeah, but you should write it up. Like,
maybe, we'll
see. Nick covered the Bakemonogatari OVAs.
Yeah, that is technically streaming on Anime Strike, so...
Oh, well,
I don't know.
I don't think people would get upset.
Yeah, I may comment on it.
Just for completion. I'm sure people would want to see what you have to say.
Right, that's a long
time. We're getting a Blu-ray set for that soon, too, aren't we?
I wouldn't say soon.
They said we hope to by 2017, end of year, so...
Yeah, end of the year, maybe. That's not soon. That's not soon. Okay. Zach and Jacob... Do you think the live-action Battle Angel Alita will be better than the live-action Ghost in the Shell? This guy's screen name is Ducati Nightmare, which is a good screen name. The live-action Battle Angel Alita is being directed by Robert Rodriguez. He of the Spy Kids franchise, The Adventures of Shark Boy and or Lava Girl. One of my least favorite directors in history. Maybe my least favorite director?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan of his stuff, and so I have no idea whether or not this movie's going to be good. I assume it's being supervised by Cameron. I don't know what Cameron's involvement is, though. So we'll see. But, like, I don't know. Like, I guess sort of the question I wanted to ask you, Jacob, was, like, how would you, I know I'm sure you haven't thought about it, but think about that Ghost in the Shell movie now.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel?
A totally average shrug-o sci-fi movie.
It was fine.
Choices. Yeah.
It was fine.
Yeah.
Like, if I saw it on cable, I might watch it for a while.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was bad, wouldn't say it was good. It was like, that's a fine movie.
I think that movie might age better. Like, I think once people kind of put aside their political issues with it, and because over time that's what happens. Over time that's what happens. That is what happens.
Yes,
it would be recontextualized.
I agree with you. However, because the movie decided to grab those political issues and make it part of the text of the movie, I think it's going to die much slower because it's part of the movie. It's literally part of the movie. It's not even a conversation outside of it anymore.
All right, sure. I'm just saying, like, 5-10 years from now, I think people are probably going to be talking about Ghost in the Shell, and they'll bring that up, but it'll be a side, and they'll be like, this is actually, you know, this is a fine science fiction movie, everybody. Maybe got a little too worked up about it.
I don't think anybody's going to be talking about it in 5-10 years at all. I don't think people are going to remember it. You know what I mean?
If the internet still exists as it currently does, you have to dredge up everything constantly order to keep the content churn going.
That's true.
So we definitely will be talking about this Ghost in the Shell movie 10 years from now.
Right.
It'll be 10 years ago, the Ghost in the Shell movie opened right now. Shrug. Let's have a retrospective.
Boring.
I'll hire a freelancer for that one right now.
But like, because we're actually a little ways out when we did that podcast, we couldn't have possibly known what the reaction would be or the box office. So we know now that it was a bomb, absolutely a flop. But in Japan, people were wondering about critical reaction and reception in Japan. Did really well. So yeah. Japan was really happy with it, apparently. And I can see that, because the dumbness of the whitewashing and all that stuff and all the factors into it is not an issue for Japan, because they get media made for them constantly. It's still cool to see foreigners, you know, taking on their media. It's like, it's not the same thing as Asian Americans.
Yeah, it's tough to explain it in like a tweet, but right. like the context of why that movie did fine in Japan is perfectly understandable and does not at all negate the feelings about it in the West, as irritating as that that argument was to see.
Just right what with Chuck is like, Japanese citizens do not equal Asian Americans. Like, that's pretty much that sums up the issue.
Or worldwide audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is an issue. This is an American issue.
Or the final word on how literally everyone is supposed to feel about this.
Yeah, it's an American issue for American viewers. It was never going to be an issue for Japanese viewers.
I feel like it's not. I feel like that movie will. I just have a feeling like that it will be looked on a little kinder than it was received down the road. It feels like.
Yeah, maybe.
Alita. All right, you know, I don't want to bang on Rodriguez too much, but like, I just don't. I have no idea what to expect. Mm-hmm. None. So like, once we start seeing pre-production stuff, we'll see. There's been some casting for that movie.
Yeah. It has?
Lindsay, do you remember who's been cast for that?
No, but I feel like the cast is more multicultural than Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah, well, they're definitely not like going to make that
the lead might be a Latina, but I would have to look that up.
So that I'm pretty sure was definitely always going to be the case, was Rodriguez definitely wanted to make it with the Latina in the lead. And to me, that sounds great to me. I would be fine with that. People are probably going to be horrible about it, but maybe they won't. Who fucking knows?
Who cares about
the
Battle
worst
Angel?
Thing in the world is like worrying about how Twitter is going to react to shit.
Look, I know we have to talk. I know we have to talk about this because the movie has been in limbo it's been in production, like pre-production hell for.
No,
like,
it'll probably happen.
A decade. I know, but I'm. That's not what I'm
sorry,
saying.
Sorry, go on.
It's been in pre-production for hell for 10 years, so we have to talk about it. Like, oh, this is happening. It's an anime adaptation, so no matter what, how small the property, we have to talk about it. But who fucking remembers or cares about Battle Angel, though?
The manga's like extremely well regarded
with modern anime fans.
A lot of people read it.
People don't remember Battle
Angel.
It's
a consistent seller for this.
Okay, but I'm just saying, like, it's not a thing where maybe my point is the reason more.
It's
discourse.
Not like an evergreen thing that like. Children,
no,
men
but
and women
I'm saying the reason that you haven't heard more discourse about Robert Rodriguez, I can't remember what the casting is. Well, that's because it's Battle Angel and people don't pay attention to Battle Angel.
I mean, James Cameron, the only reason that there is a Battle Angel movie is that James Cameron wanted to make it. Mm-hmm. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's the only reason it's happening. It has nothing to do with anything else. Mm-hmm. It is not because it is a blockbuster property. It's not because everyone loves it. It's not because the books sell really well. Mm-hmm. James Cameron likes those comics, so that movie's getting made.
Right. I'm not saying I'm not saying it's like horribly obscure. I'm just saying compared to Ghost in the Shell, Death Note, etc. Like, people don't talk about it as much because it's Battle Angel.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, on the scale, there's Ghost in the Shell, Battle Angel, and then Iria the Animation. So, I mean,
You're
or what is it? Is it Iria or Zerium? I don't know.
Iria,
it was the one with
Zerum?
The girl with the bead in her hair and there was the robot.
Yeah, Iria, Zerum. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a live-action movie that everyone should see. Okay. All right, let's move on. Okay. I like this question. Caden in Flagstaff wants to know... A genuine Caden. That's good. Which series do you regret never finishing or never starting in the first place? Well, this is a two-parter. Let's start with that. Series you regret never finishing. For me, I think that's the original Macross. I still haven't finished that. What about you?
I don't know. It's hard to remember.
Show that you started that didn't finish that you're like, you know, I should finish that.
I honestly know because I remember I go back and I'm like, oh, I should finish that to a lot of stuff, and I don't know, I usually finish it, right? So I can't think of anything pressing, like, oh, I want to finish this show, like, nothing. I can tell you that the thing that I wish that I had started, and never did, was, like, One Piece, because there's no way I'm going to catch up on it, because I like
feel like
it.
Everyone would tell you that. Everyone wishes they were reading One Piece the whole time.
Yeah, there's no way to catch up on it, but it's like, well, this is really, like, weird and unique and fun and charming, and, but I don't, there's no way I'm going to fucking catch up on it. So, you know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Lindsay, take that first one.
Let's see. That's kind of a hard question. I drop things constantly.
Yeah.
Like, to be honest, like, I drop things all the time. My attention span is not very big, and I work a lot, and I have children, so
yeah.
I drop things all the time. But I guess as far as something that I didn't go back and finish and then became important enough that it's kind of relevant now is Death Note. I've never finished Death Note. I know what happens at the end because there's no way not to know at this point, right. But kind of wish I'd kept up on Death Note and finished it when it aired so I could have experienced that.
There's 20 different versions to choose from, so
yeah. Like 20, 30 which way, different versions. Like, there should be like a drink that is somehow you're also getting the story for Death Note through it. Like,
yeah.
It feels like that's been adapted every possible way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the other Speaking one that I which. Think I wish that I would have started because, again, it's relevant now, and it was definitely had a moment in the anime community was Code Geass.
It wasn't a moment. Death Note had like a presence and continues to have a presence. Same thing.
Well, right. No, no. But I mean about the other show that had a moment was Code Geass when like the first season ended and everyone was like, oh my God, what's going to happen? And we didn't know if there was going to be a second season. I didn't get to experience that with everybody and I've still never watched any of it.
Mm. Yeah.
And then it happened and it was like, oh, why did we want this?
And now we're getting more of it anyway, whether you wanted it or not. So...
Okay, and then a show that you regret never starting in the first place. Well, also never finishing for me, Legend of the Galactic Heroes. I never finished that. Mm-hmm. I've always meant to. Would like to. Maybe they'll finally release it someday and I'll get to. The one that I regret never starting in the first place, Dragon Ball? As much as it would be handy if I knew Dragon Ball.
It would be useful for work.
Useful
yeah.
for work. That would be very useful for my job.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's also the answer to what
Shonen Jump shows.
Yeah. So the other
should know those for work.
Right. Yeah. Right. The other real question here is, what's the longest show you'd like to watch all of? Mm-hmm. And I guess the answer for that is the same for me, both Legend of the Galactic Heroes and One Piece. Mm-hmm. But I would rather read One Piece than watch it. I would much rather read all of One Piece than watch it.
That makes sense. I'm just not much of a manga
I guess
person.
For me, it's just the answer to all of this is Legend of the Galactic Heroes. Mm-hmm. Lindsay, longest show you'd like to watch?
I guess I'll jump on that same bandwagon because my best friend is a huge One Piece fan and she keeps trying to like push me into it. Lindsay, you need to get on One Piece. And my response is always, it's on episode 700 and whatever. I'm not...
Yeah, no. I don't have time. I got kids.
You could like plug it in and just like fast forward it, so I just knew everything, and then I would watch it with you. But
yeah,
no.
Yeah, download it into your brain somehow.
Right.
Let's see here. Okay, scrolling on. All right, I'm not sure if we're into the retro minds yet. Oh, we are. Okay. These are our last couple of email questions, and then we've got some stuff from Twitter. Okay. Hey, Zach and Jacob. I enjoyed your discussion of the old days on last week's show and wanted to hear a little more about your anime club experiences. I, too, became an anime fan in high school in the 1990s and went to a college anime club, although mine was in Minnesota. It must have been fun. And I have a lot of fond and not-so-fond memories of my time as a young nerd trading tapes. Do you have any other stories from that time? So, like, stories from college anime club.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot. Like, I have a lot of those.
Take the floor.
There was a lot of those. But, Lindsay, last week we talked about this stuff, and I was curious what your experience was. Like, I mean, we don't necessarily need, like, the how you got into anime story, but, like, did you go to high – when you were young, did you go to – I'm sorry. When you were younger –
Oh, when did you shit. Nice you can't catch. Just leave that laying on the ground, Zach.
When you were younger.
I don't get carded anymore, I know.
What was your experience? Did you go to clubs?
Yes. Yes. Right. I did go to a college anime club at my local community college. I found out about it because I was not in college. I was in high school. But I found out about the screenings that we had at our community college by running into one of the members who ran it at Suncoast Video.
That's how
it
usually happens.
So I was at Suncoast Video in the anime section with my mother and 14 years old. And one of the college guys approached me and told me, you know, we've got this anime club at community college and we do screenings every Saturday. You should come. So I did. I started going. I went, I brought my best friend with me, and that's how I saw a lot of early subtitled stuff. Like, Flame of Recca. I saw the first episode of One Piece there.
Yeah.
To kind of talk about like how long the show's been on. We watched the first episode of One Piece when I was like 14 or 15 years old. What are some of the other shows? I saw the Saber Marionette J, a lot of that stuff. So that's how I got to see a lot of things when, you know, they sold 4 episodes on VHS subtitled for $30. And I was a teenager with no job.
One Piece kind of premiered like right towards the end of that era. Like towards the end of VHS, the beginning of digital. It was right in there. So I think it was 1999. That sounds pretty typical. The story that I remember vividly is when Princess Mononoke came out, it was a huge thing, because I remember everyone talking about Titanic was the biggest movie ever at the time, and Princess Mononoke was like challenging it for domination and beat it at the time in Japan, and it was this big like, oh my god, can you believe this movie beat Titanic? Mm-hmm. It was the biggest deal ever. And the movie had come out on Laserdisc in Japan, and like getting copies of it were at a serious premium. Mm-hmm. And I remember my anime club, I was not part of the management at the time. Mm-hmm. I was still like kind of I would hang out with the guys who ran the club, but I had not been accepted fully into their ranks yet. So I didn't really get the whole story of exactly how this happened. But I know that they had paid someone to bring them a tape who had promised them, my friend from Japan has this, I can get it to you, subtitled, it's the movie, Princess Mononoke, we can do it. She was supposed to show up, like, they filled the biggest auditorium on campus, like with like 800 people or whatever, 1,200 people. They filled it, packed, to capacity. They advertised a screening for Princess Mononoke everywhere. And everyone was fucking dying to see it. It was, geez, this was like a huge thing. We were watching a bootleg like on campus. Anyway, 7 p.m., she's supposed to show up with this tape. Mm-hmm. And the guys from the anime club are fucking panicking, like panicked. Mm-hmm. And she finally shows up with the tape and will not give it to them unless they cough up more money.
Mm-hmm.
So bleeds them. She shakes them down, basically.
Wow.
Which, I have to tell you, that's a pretty enterprising college student. I kind of have to respect the hustle on that one, like, a little bit.
It's like, I know you need this.
Because the guys who ran the college anime club were, like, 40.
Yeah.
Like, they were not other students. They were, like, 40-year-olds. And I think she was like, hey, fuck you, old man, I think. Yeah. Anyway. So they paid, because they didn't have any other choice. And they put the tape in, and it is, I mean, I've seen some 12th generation copies.
Mm-hmm.
But you could barely fucking tell what was going on.
Like shake cam.
Like, you know the worst quality VHS where it feels like you're viewing it through like a window into another dimension. It's not really there. It's like in Poltergeist where like the image kind of fades in and out and you're not really sure what you're seeing. You had like 1,200 people in this movie with tracking problems and fuzz like in the sound from the tracking problems. So you'd hear like like it was just the worst screening I could possibly imagine. And you're watching that movie, which is this gorgeous, like all time, like one of the most beautiful animated movies ever. And you're just watching it in the absolute worst possible quality on a projector from 1998. Wait a minute. In 1998, this was installed in a college, so it's probably from like 1995.
Older, yeah.
Blown up on a huge screen.
Oh my god.
The worst possible copy of Princess Mononoke, and they had to pay like out the nose for a chance to show it.
Oh my god.
That I remember.
Damn.
So, yeah. Those were good times.
Mm.
Those were good times. Jacob, do you have any memories from your anime club days?
I don't, so the anime club at my college was dying when I entered it. The guy who ran it was his last year at college, and he was closing up shop and looking for somebody to pass it on to. And, I guess I enjoyed that. It was fairly well run. They used fan subs. This was...
Sure. I mean, that was most anime clubs.
Yeah, but this was past the point where they knew it was okay. This is the thing. I gave people shit about the piracy.
That's still most anime.
I know, but it was late enough.
From what I understand,
it was late enough that I and a couple other people gave him shit about
now
the piracy.
Now they still do this shit.
Yeah, I know. But it was 2008, so I gave him shit about piracy. I was like, we have legal options for this. You know, why are you doing this? But I still went and stuff like that. And it was the format was like one shonen show. Everybody voted one shonen show, one shoujo show, one other, and one throwback. And that was how I saw the throwback. Was how I saw Kimigoro Orange Road and Armored Trooper Votoms, both of which I liked. And
that's a classic anime club experience.
I liked both of those a lot, actually. I liked Votoms a little more than Road after the first couple. And Kimigoro Orange Road repeats itself. You just need to see the first couple episodes, and you don't need to watch more than that.
But, it's not Votoms unless you're sitting next to a guy with a huge beard and suspenders who's like coughing in acknowledgement.
I might have been.
Someone saying something boring on screen.
Yeah, but either way, so I sort of enhanced the experience by bringing DVDs, and that eventually the miscellany category that they would go through the DVDs that I had, because I had a big collection and stuff like that. But after the first year, he kicked off and decided to pass it to these guys who had no idea what they were doing. I was like, I'd be happy to take it, but it was I won't say the reason, because it brings up things about me from the past, but. There was a very obvious, let's say, binary reason why he chose these two boys over me.
Right.
But they were like, they didn't know how to run the thing, and it folded immediately. But I stopped going because I was like, these jackasses don't know what they're doing, and it's not fun anymore. But while the guy was running it in that first year or so, he one season tried to force people to watch this sort of modern Legend of the Galactic Heroes imitator called Titania, which is this absolutely unwatchably boring, stupid show.
He didn't try to make you watch Glass Fleet?
He might have at some point, but that was obvious.
Like the same show.
He was Prime Beardo, and that was like his shit, right? So he put Titania into the running without like anybody voting on it or whatever. And so we would start to watch it anytime. But if he had to step out of the room, there were times where he was often like, "Oh, I have to go take care of something. He probably needed to go smoke or something."
Just like that.
Yeah, and he would leave, and immediately we'd be like, go, 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 and somebody would run up, fucking turn off Titania, or they would minimize it so it was still running, so that he wouldn't, if it was 5 or 10 minutes, that he wouldn't, and they would play music videos or some other portion of some other show we were interested in, etc. But we took Titania off the screen the second.
You're like still upset about this.
Well, it was funny to me. I'm not upset. I just thought it was.
You're still like, fuck that guy.
No, not fuck that guy, just it was amusing how dickish we were about it, because he was being dickish, so, yeah. But yeah, well, like,
you know, those little anime club tyrants, they're they can be pretty tough.
Yeah,
I dealt with a lot of them,
but
I'm sure I was that guy to other people.
Mm-hmm.
But I dealt with them myself as well, so I have experience with them, in addition to I probably was like that to some people, so mm-hmm. Yeah,
but yeah, I was only part of the anime club for a year and change, because that guy moved on, and it was like, oh well, this is, you know, it was just fine. You were just watching anime with other people at first, but then it was like bad when he left, so it was like meh. But I for me, anime club wasn't a formative experience. I was already like hardcore into anime, entering into that, so it wasn't like, and there wasn't an accessibility problem, as you know, like I had like fast internet for the first time in college, so I was actually getting access to the stuff before in better ways than I had before, whereas my high school experience was closer to your anime club experience, because I didn't have internet, so it was more like weirdly tape trading or DVD trading anyway, as opposed to the whole fan sub thing, which was just immediate in college, and I rebelled against very hard, because I'm like, we have legal options for this, and I spent money on this, and you know, we should you know, legal options rather than just downloading fan subs.
Yeah.
But anyway, but yeah, for me, Anime Club wasn't like a formative thing, because it was already so accessible by 2008 that all the stuff that was more like niche, or there's more, I don't know, weirdness to it, I already told last week in talking about high school.
So, right. You know. Okay. Well, we can move on then.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. well, there's just another question down these kind of lines. Mm-hmm. Two of them, actually. All right. Hey, Ancast. This is an all caps. Confess. How many wall scrolls did you own, and which ones? The same ones were sold everywhere in the 90s and 2000s, so we'll know which ones you mean. Describe them. Describe them is also in all caps. Sam in Seattle. Wall scrolls. I had plenty of them. I had the Final Fantasy VII one with all of the characters like standing on like they're getting their mugshot taken or whatever. It's just key art like lined up. Mm-hmm. I had a Slayers one where they're all sitting under a tree. Everyone knows that image where they're all sitting under a tree staring forward. I had the Fushigi Yugi one where it's Miyaka in the foreground and then the cast behind her all kind of lined up. I think I might have had a Sailor Moon one at one point. I had a very brief Sailor Moon phase. It was like 2 weeks long.
long enough to buy a Wall Scroll.
I don't really remember which one. I know it was Neptune and Uranus, but I don't remember what one it was. They were posed, maybe crossed, mm-hmm. something like that. I had a Princess Mononoke one with Ashitaka on the Yakuul holding his bow. Geez, there were some others, but I'm having a hard time remembering them. Lindsay, what do you remember any of the Wall Scrolls you made?
Well, now I'm like going back to a place where I have to remember what my room was. I had a weirdly shaped room at my parents' house. It was sort of like almost octangular, like
okay.
Okay, so in this room, I did have a Sailor Moon Wall Scroll. I feel like it was one of all the girls together. I had a freebie poster that I got for Battle Skipper that was there.
You still have that?
No, I don't. And shame. I never even watched it, but it was given out at the anime club. Someone just had a bunch of them, and so I had a Battle Skipper poster.
That's great.
My dad worked at a grocery store that used to have an in-store video rental. They don't have them anymore. But he was able to get me a Good Burger movie poster for when it came out on video. So I had Good Burger in there.
That's just the best. I wish you still had it. I would buy it off you.
Don't have that anymore. And I feel like... So I might have just had one or two Sailor Moon ones in there, plus Battle Skipper, plus Good Burger.
Who had the 11x17 laminated, the 11x17 laminated like key art posters that they would sell at bootleg shops? Did you have any of those?
Yeah,
like anime stores, they would sell these cheap like $5.
I've got a bunch of them in there.
Jacob has a bunch of this shit in the closet.
Wait, let me just. Just keep speaking.
I mean, I had a bunch of those. The thing is that, like, we still, like, there's a store, we live in Orange County, California. There's, like, a lot of, there's a lot of anime stores here still. Plenty of them have this stuff still. Like, they still sell those 11x, and some of them are still the same ones.
I have all of these.
Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball ones from the 90s. Like, they still have the Slayers and all. They're still in there, but they're in there with, like, Death Note and, like, whatever was popular like 2 years ago, 2-3 years ago.
I have, so some of these are fan art, so that doesn't count. But all the 11x17s were bought together in one occasion. It was this was one convention. This is the only time I've ever bought these, but that's where literally all of these are from.
Okay, now remember, this is an audio podcast, so let's make this
right. We'll describe this one is my personal favorite because it's kind of inscrutable. This is. It would appear to be Lelouch.
What the fuck is that?
I know, Lelouch, right? It's Lelouch and Colin, but they are sort of a prince and princess Halloween Cinderella.
Is that? No, that's not fan art.
No, this is official key art.
That's like from a new type, like in October.
Right. All these 11x17. I'm going to discard the fan art. All these 11x17s were, again, bought on one occasion when somebody was like 50 cents a pop, and I was like, okay, I'll grab a bunch of them. There's this. I know there's a couple Vampire Knights in here because I used to like that show.
Oh, yeah, Vampire Knight.
I used to love hate this show, but it got boring later. The first season's really funny still, but so here's a Vampire Knight.
These are 11x17s. Mm-hmm. They're a little bigger than that, but.
I feel like my Battle Skipper one was about this size.
Yeah, right. It probably was.
Oh, God. So here's the ghost of 2009.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Merry fucking Christmas.
Vitalia
Christmas, which is...
I thought you were dead.
This is 2009.anime.
No, that's the... I haven't heard that name in years.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Yeah.
So what else is in here? Oh, I like this one. This is all manga art from Trigun.
Yeah.
Manga.
It's Naito.
Yep.
Look at the face in the middle. It's all like, what is that? The guy in the middle with the hat and the eye?
Yeah, he's got like a Two-Face. He's based on Two-Face.
It's not a good illustration.
No, he's... but, you know. His name is Livio something. I don't remember.
To the folks at home, just imagine these.
Angel Beats.
Yep.
Straightforward. Sorry, this is...
How many are there?
We're almost through all of them. And this is another try again.
Get another
badge. I have pretty consistent interests that comes to this one. And here's some Vampire Knight manga art, and there you go. So that was
manga art is significantly better than the anime art.
Significantly, like, well, that's mostly her. That's the reason I think that show was that property was so popular. Is she's a really good, like, sort of, I don't know, gravure, like, sexy lace and blood sort of artist. But the story is just, well, at first entertaining bad. But, you know, so, yeah.
Well, yep, the soul still burns.
The most unique wall scroll I had was one from Beck Mongolian Chop Squad. Apart from that, they were all pretty standard Death Note, Haruhi, you know,
right,
sort of business.
All right. Okay, moving on. Secret Kitsune wants to know, your show last week got me thinking about buying single anime discs, which is where most of my money went in the early 2000s. I remember stalking Suncoast and Best Buy, hunting for new releases.
GameStop, too.
GameStop, right. Chasing pencil boards and other physical extras, especially the coveted Volume 1 Plus box. You didn't really have to chase those. Those were available everywhere.
Yeah, you
can still find them if you want them.
Yeah, go ahead.
The longest series I collected was Genion Sailor Moon and Cardcaptor Sakura. Wow. You had...
Yeah,
all caps. I had the complete Cardcaptor Sakura. That's a good... That collection was worth something for a while. At one point, my collection had over 500 discs in it. Over the years, I've sold a lot of it off. I converted what I wanted to Blu-ray, and I buy less stuff now, but I wanted to know how big your anime DVD collection got in those years. The most expensive thing that you had, the longest series that you collected, that sort of thing. Wow, okay. So, during those years, I was working in the industry, so a lot of my collection was just press stuff that I reviewed and then put on the shelf. I don't think I had more than ever had more than about 250 discs. And the most I think I ever spent on anything was that Escaflowne box with the two boxes, and one of them had a Escaflowne model in it of the black Escaflowne. Mm-hmm. That was probably the most I spent. I think I spent like 150 on that, 170, something like that. I don't know. But yeah, I don't think I ever spent more than that on any single release. Probably if you counted, like, buying all the Bebop singles at full price, or, like, I don't think I ever bought all of Trigun. But, yeah, those were the things that I spent the most money on. But my collection, like, it's kind of hard to judge because, like, so much of it was just screener material. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know how much I actually spent, but it was at least 200 discs at one point. Mm-hmm. You bought a lot of singles.
Yeah, here's the thing. I wasn't really Mr. Moneybags back then. I bought basically everything used.
Mm.
But I would buy it used in good enough condition where it wasn't like there weren't like holes in it. But like I don't think I had almost any new anime. It was all used, but it was used singles and stuff like that because that's still how it was released. But yeah, like I started anime collecting with the single discs of Fruits Basket. That was my first like
right.
Purchase. Not counting Pokemon.
And those were like a big deal because they had like 12 episodes each or something, or 8 or something like that?
They crammed them on. That video quality on those is bad.
I know. I'm just saying like a lot of people bought those. Those were a huge success.
Yeah, they were, they were very accessible, certainly. But like, I had Pokemon VHS before that and I burned my own discs of Digimon. Basically, I taped Digimon off of TV onto VHS and then I burned those onto DVDs. And I made art for them. It was a long time ago. And it was cute. But not counting that.
Adorable.
My first official purchases when I was about, I don't know, 14 or 15 or whatever was Fruits Basket. And then beyond that, I just continued to purchase more and more. And it was all just whatever I could find used either online or at the mall at like a Suncoast or an FYE. But the tricky thing for me was that anime was not allowed in my house.
Right.
So I had to purchase it and then hide it. So under my bed, I had a big four-poster bed. And under my bed, it was just rows and rows and rows. Uh-huh. And but it was covered up and stuff like that, and I just, my room wasn't really investigated. And sometimes it got taken away, but like they never really threw it away because they didn't check the contents, so they got bored, and I just, which they should have, because they found Berserk once. The Berserk singles, which I still have.
Oh, thank God it wasn't like the manga or something. Can you even imagine?
I can't. Well, I mean, it's pretty bad. That sixth disc has Guts making his like angry face, holding a topless Casca on the front of the sixth disc. But like, yeah, I mean, they for whatever reason didn't throw them away, because I think I was getting to the age where they thought that they would be demonized to my friends over it, and that's something that they cared about. They used to throw things that I had away all the time as a child. They stopped doing that as a teen because for some reason they gave a shit that I demonized them. I just literally told people what they did to my friends, and so they stopped doing that. They would just take them, and then I would like take them back, you know.
Yeah.
And either way, I bought a lot of anime. I bought a lot of it sight unseen, too. Like, my most regretful purchase was probably Saikano, the girlfriend.
She, the ultimate weapon.
Because it was expensive. Because that was licensed by, I don't even remember, some weird...
Fizz.
Well... Okay, yep. It was dubbed by a weird company, I think, is what it was. It was released by Viz, but it was hard to get a hold of for whatever reason. But it came so highly recommended.
Maybe you got to it after it had been out for a while or something.
Yeah, it had been out for a while, but it came very highly recommended, courtesy of like of I think Bamboo on ANN. And so I watched it, and
it's
I was
one
like,
of her favorite
oh,
shows.
I didn't absolutely hate it, but I was like, oh, this was not what I worth what I paid for it, which was probably $70 total. For it, so
yeah, that was an expensive release.
It was.
That show fucking sucks, dude.
It does, but like my point is, so my
I didn't
point
used
is,
to think that.
I spent way more money on anime then than I do now because we get I work in it, so we get stuff for free with the payback the return for that is of course that you have to use it for work, but we still keep stuff when we work on it. But like yeah, I spent a lot of money on anime, but I spent less than most people because it was always about used pricing, getting stuff that was marked up for $30 for $15.
Right.
You know? But it was still $15 for 4 episodes. You know.
Yeah.
It's still a lot.
Still paying out the nose for
still
a show.
A I cared a lot. I liked anime a lot.
So. You still do. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see here. All right. Last email question. All right. Oh, this is an interesting one. Hey, Zach and Jacob. I love the show. Thank you very much. You guys talk a lot about Marvel, Star Wars, DC Comics, all that stuff, and you sound kind of tired of it. I was wondering, of the big franchises, Harry Potter and Marvel, which is your favorite? Which one do you still like the most? This goes on. So well, let's take that one first. So of the big nerd culture franchises, Jacob, which one do you still like the most?
Well, I've talked a lot. I thought maybe you were Lindsay. I talk too much, I think.
It's okay. No, it's okay. I'm hitting you first.
Jeez. I guess Pokemon. Does that count? That's a huge...
No, it doesn't count.
Okay, so...
That's like evergreen. You're going to love it forever no matter what.
But yeah,
like,
but I'm not
nerd culture. So like, let's stick to Western stuff.
Okay.
Let's take the discussion to Western stuff.
So it's
not Pokemon.
So it's Marvel,
Star Wars,
Marvel,
Lord
Star
of the Rings,
Lord
Harry
of the Rings.
Potter,
okay,
etc.
Well, Lord of the Rings, they're not making new stuff, and the stuff that they made that was new, I hated. So I don't know if that counts.
Yeah. See, that's the thing is that like the one that I still like the franchise that I have the most love in my heart for still is just the original Lord of the Rings, just
right.
The first three Lord of the Rings movies. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah.
And then, like, nothing that came after.
Yeah, right?
Nothing. There are no... They never made a movie of The Hobbit. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But they never made it. It seemed like they were just leaving money on the table there, me. But, like, that's not really a thing. They don't really draw from that so much anymore. I'm sure they will at some point. But, like, and it's also mostly my love for those movies. Not mm-hmm. necessarily, like, I'm not running out buying Lord of the Rings stuff. I'm not, like, a huge fan of Lord of the Rings. I just... Those are the movies that I retained the most of my love.
Yeah.
And I am significantly less sick of Star Wars than I am of Marvel. But I'm not, like, sick to death of either of these things. We're going to go see Guardians of the Galaxy on Saturday. Mm-hmm. I will still watch all of this stuff. I am still entertained by it, largely. But mm-hmm. we talk about mm-hmm. it, and we talk about our frustrations with it. And it's culture now, so...
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of how it comes across.
Weirdly, of those things, I guess I'm... So this is a problem because I'm least fatigued with Harry Potter, but I also never even saw all the original
Harry Potter movies.
Because I wasn't raised with it. I saw all the Harry Potter movies, excuse me, I saw the Harry Potter movies that I've seen, which is like four or five of them, as an adult, and now I'm like, oh yeah, Harry Potter stuff is charming. So, but that puts me in a neat position because I'm not really a fan. But like, I'm actively burned out on and don't give a shit about Star Wars or Marvel. So, or somebody mentions Game of Thrones, I don't care about Game of Thrones either. Like, so I'm so burned out on a lot of franchise stuff. I guess the live action Disney stuff I'm still interested in.
Yeah, that counts.
Okay,
if Disney counts, then Disney
classic Disney canon. I'm not tired of that.
Disney counts, then that's. Probably
I'm not tired of that. I'm like, oh, they're making a new live-action Aladdin. I can't wait to see that.
I mean, they're going to run out of those movies quick.
They are.
Like, once Aladdin and the Lion King and the Little Mermaid come out, it's kind of gravy after. Like, whatever they make after that is like, okay, I guess I'll go see the live-action Oliver and Company, but maybe I'd rather do the dishes. You know, like, that sort of thing.
Yeah, so there we go. I still have some affection for, oh, maybe this will be good. I liked the live-action Cinderella. I liked the live-action Jungle Book. I didn't actively hate Beauty and the Beast, but I probably will if I try to watch it again.
You thought it was okay.
I didn't think it was okay. I just didn't hate it. And it was a bad movie. I just didn't feel strong hate feelings for it. But I probably would if I had to watch it a bunch, if I had to watch it again. Okay. So I shouldn't ever watch it again. Because
you will. You definitely will.
If it's on TV or something, it'll probably end up, but, you know.
Lindsay, which of these things do you still have the most affection for still?
I guess for me, it's helped a lot to really take a low-key interest in it.
Yeah, sure.
I think if I was, like, fervently invested in all of the Marvel Cinematic Universe or things like that, it would be a lot easier to be burnt out on it by now. I just see the movies when they come out. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I haven't seen Doctor Strange yet, even though I had an interest in seeing it, just didn't get around to it. I'm more interested in their like one-off spin-offs. I am finding myself kind of done with like the major, like Thor, Captain America, Iron Man. I'm kind of done with their dynamic in general, not as interested as I am in, say, the Doctor Strange film or Black Panther or the other, like, offshoots. They tend to have more fun with those, it seems like. I liked the first Guardians of the Galaxy, so I am looking forward to the second one. I haven't jumped in the DC boat at all. I'll go see Wonder Woman more as a sticking point, like, to support that film. But I didn't see any of the recent Superman. Didn't see Dawn of Justice either. Okay, Christian Bale was good. You know, that trilogy was good enough for me. I wasn't really in a hurry to revisit Batman. Live action Disney stuff, though, I guess I'm colder towards that. I did go see Beauty and the Beast. It was all right for what it was, but it wasn't the animated film. And I guess it's just, some people can separate the two, but I have a really hard time with those ones in particular. So I just don't like. I'm actually a little freaked out about live action Little Mermaid. I have memories of seeing that in theaters, as I did with Beauty and the Beast as a child. So it's just like, I don't know how they're going to handle all the CG effects. It's all a bunch of it's underwater.
Right.
Put my arms up to that one, I guess.
It's going
to
look like the same CG as everything else. Like, it's just going
to
look like high-definition CG. Everything looks like a Square Enix cutscene now to me.
Yep.
I was rewatching. I was watching Rogue One with the Red Letter Media commentary, and mostly they just sit there and say, this is boring, which it is.
It is.
Extremely boring.
That's dog shit.
When we first... When that movie first came out, I defended it, saying, like, because people were pretty hard on it. Upon rewatching it, it's extremely boring.
I couldn't
bring myself to care at all.
It's a $3 theater now, and I want to go see it, but I haven't yet.
You know what? So Star Wars in general, like, I don't, again, I said.
I mean, I'm really excited for The Last Jedi. Like, I'm not being ironic. I am super excited for The Last Jedi, and I loved The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
With all of my dumb little heart. So, like, it's just the spinoff. I thought, like, originally, it was a lot like the other movies where you walk out and you're like, that was good, right, that was good. And then later you see it again and you're like, no, it was not. And it wasn't like a train wreck. It was just really fucking boring and like really hard to be interested in anything that was going on. And like, yeah, I just didn't care at all the second time through. And I saw all the problems with it. And yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, that is a big caveat. Like, so Star Wars, like if I see Star Wars merchandise, Star Wars spinoffs, Star Wars cartoons, like I do not care at all. But I did really, really like The Force Awakens just as a movie. I attached it really hard to the characters. Specifically, I really liked Rey and Finn and Poe, and like especially Kylo Ren. Like Kylo Ren is a great villain. I would put him, like, depending on what they do with him, I would say like all time great villain performances in a genre movie. Like, just fantastic. But like, that's separate from every other Star Wars thing. Like the original trilogy. You know, I mean, it's nice and everything. I just don't have strong feelings toward it. Prequels, garbage. All that spinoff stuff, it just feels like cereal to me. It just feels like product. It just washes over me and all my feelings. Rogue One, terrible. But I really liked The Force Awakens. I will say that. So, and I am looking forward to The Last Jedi because I want more time with those characters. And for me, it's all about the characters and the production aesthetic of that movie. Which, yeah, it looked like everything looks like CG paste now. And that movie had like practical effects and, you know, a flavor to it. It had like a, you know, a
feeling. Well, was it they actually like spent time figuring out how to chemically create that bread scene? Like,
yeah. Right. That is real. Yeah.
Yep.
But like, yeah, stuff like that where it's like, oh yeah. So to answer your question, I guess the least fatigued I am is like weirdly with The Force Awakens, but only that. The rest of the Star Wars stuff, so fatigued, could not give a shit. Just The Force Awakens, anything directly connected to it. Yeah. I want to see more of that. I'm excited about that. I want to see. Let's see what happens to Poe and Kylo Ren and Rey. So yeah,
maybe they'll kiss. Probably not.
Whatever.
Probably not.
He's unconscious and she's like a bazillion miles away right now, so probably not.
No, I meant Poe and Finn.
Oh, right. Probably not.
Probably not.
No, they'll just tease that. So
there's gonna be like one fucking Wookiee in the background who like looks at another male Wookiee and is like, and they'll be like, first gay Wookiee.
Yeah.
And groundbreaking, like, first gay Wookiee. Yeah. And you're like, hey, I'm pretty sure there were some gay Wookiees in the holiday special. I'm pretty sure.
Not Grandpa, though.
You kids want to see a gay Chewbacca?
Grandpa likes them ladies, as we were reminded in 5 minutes of the holiday special where we watched Grandpa beat off to a lady. It's in the holiday special.
There's several erotic parts of the holiday special.
Weird.
Oh, God.
Moving on in this question, which one has lost the most appeal for you? Marvel,
yes. Marvel. No, DC, though. DC is worse.
You know what? You're right. Batman was my
favorite.
Can
we just say comic books and then boot them off a cliff?
Yeah.
Fucking comic book movies.
Yeah, comic books, yeah.
Fuck
Marvel
that.
And DC, I would say together. DC way, like, so I tired. Used to love Batman. I do not anymore. Marvel, I still watch the stuff. It's still fine. It's...
What lovely
it is
paste.
Just the popular internet. It's just the westerns of our day. It's fine. Everyone grew tired of westerns too. It's not
westerns were also paced. Yeah, they went on too long.
Yeah, but there were some really great ones.
My grandma still watches them.
Yeah. Anyway, so comic books were the thing that I think we can agree on. Like, and again, like, it's really important.
Did
I think
Disney hear us and cut our shit off?
Yeah. Right. I think it's really important to be really precise with your language when you're talking about this stuff.
Yeah.
Because the thing that I hate is when I talk about this stuff and then I see Zach hates superhero movies. No, I fucking don't. I would not go see them if I hated them.
Uh-huh. Well,
it's just like if you eat like a lot of sandwiches, and sandwiches are kind of like, you know, they've been part of your life this whole time, and then sandwiches are everywhere. Like, you talk about sandwiches a lot. Like, it's just and you eat a lot of sandwiches. Like, they're everywhere. It's ubiquitous. You can't get away with it. Get away from it. And if you're into like popular culture and film and everything, and grew up with these characters, like, you can't really just like, if there were real anger and real like, oh, I'm really tired of this, I would definitely stop. And like, the only thing I ever watch are like mainline Marvel movies that I am interested in.
Uh-huh.
Like, I've skipped some of them in the theaters. You know, I haven't seen all of them in the theaters or anything like that. But it's a nuanced thing. It's like, these are my frustrations with it, and we are getting to the point where this stuff feels totally oversaturated to me, and there's way too much of it.
Right.
There's three Marvel movies this year.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
For me, it's not necessarily the omnipresence, although, yeah, that doesn't help. Like, it would help if it was less omnipresent. Things can't feel special when they're constantly in your face all the time. But for me,
that's, and that's the way with Star Wars is that I don't have an emotional reaction to Star Wars usually anymore.
Yeah.
I used to all the time. How could you at this point? How can you have an emotional reaction to a thing that you have seen? You see in every surface of everything, everywhere, all the time.
It's just
like I don't know how you're supposed to continue to have the same emotional reaction to this thing again and again and again and again through your whole life in every circumstance in which you are confronted with it. I just don't see how you don't get tired.
Yeah, for me, it's not necessarily just the omnipresence, although that doesn't help, but it's also the Marvel. Well, the DC movies are actively bad, and the Marvel movies are just flavorless. Like, there's no risk there. They always follow basically the same
pattern. Well, you're a little harder on this stuff than I am.
Yeah, like, I'm not claiming to speak for you, but and director after director has left Marvel movies because they aren't really allowed to express themselves in them. Like, they're like, they try to make the movie one way, and then Disney mandates that it be identical to every other friggin' movie in the Marvel canon. And it's like, I go in there and I'm like waiting to be surprised by something emotionally, and it's just like they're shot the same way, they're scripted the same way, they're paced the same way. You can barely tell that there's any individual personality in them. Yeah. And it's like, stuff like Guardians of the Galaxy would be fun, which was different enough, would be fine if that was like there was more of that and it was some variety, but specifically the direction in which Guardians of the Galaxy decided to be unique was a direction that I didn't like, which is that I just don't like James Gunn's personality as a director. I don't like his taste. It puts me off. I think it's gross and shitty. But like, but that would be fine if there were a bunch of other different takes on Marvel that were flavored differently. But Guardians of the Galaxy was just like a James Gunn flavor on top of basically the same thing again. So I just... Yeah, for me, it's just the homogeny. I'm like, give me something different. I mean, I watch anime, which is already pretty homogenous. Clearly, my bar is not that, like, super high. But, like, if anime feels more diverse than your giant Marvel franchise cinematic universe, then maybe shake some stuff up a little bit. Like, you know, if I go to anime for diversity compared to this, that's probably a science a little pasty, you know? Whatever.
Yeah. Well... Anyway, let's see. At the end of this letter, let me read the rest of this here. Although I think I like the Marvel movies a lot more than you guys, I can feel myself getting closer to your level of tiredness with them. But I just can't see myself ever getting tired of Star Wars. Maybe Disney will prove me wrong. They might prove us all wrong. Sincerely, Heat Guy J. Okay, thank you for that. All right, thanks. To the person who wrote that.
Digging that zombie out of the ground.
Yeah.
What's that gif with Luffy pushing the zombie back into his grave?
I don't know. That's funny. Okay, we got only a couple of Twitter questions here. Let's get to this one by Ferquin Root. This pretty much just popped up today. Would a big Hollywood studio help or hurt the anime industry if they bought out a company like Funimation? In my opinion, track record points to hurt. So there's a news story on Bloomberg today that both Sony and Universal are looking to buy Funimation. Funimation's been for sale for a little while. And near as I can tell, they're the person that they installed there is from Universal. So I'm pretty sure if anything's going to happen, it's going to be that. But I'm also pretty sure that both of those studios just want those Dragon Ball rights. And that's pretty much it.
Right. Give us those Dragon Ball rights.
Yeah, they can exploit a lot of the other Funimation IP, but I think that if Universal buys outright purchases Funimation, what you're going to see is not a Funimation that operates in the way that it used to, even though now it doesn't operate in the way that it used to, even more so. You will see it operate less and less the way that it used to the point where it may not resemble... I mean, this is all speculation. Who knows? I don't know if they're going to buy them or not. But I'm just saying, like, if you're wondering what to expect, a company like NBC Universal purchasing Funimation would dramatically change Funimation. I don't care what they tell you. So we'll see. It's an interesting thing. I don't know if it would be good or bad for that company. I think it's actually kind of irresponsible to speculate on that kind of front, whether or not it's going to be good for the company or not, because they haven't. We're so early. It's one Bloomberg news item that was floated for a reason. So we will see what happens. But that's an interesting situation that is not totally surprising to me anyway. Not completely. Lindsay, any thoughts?
Oh, well, I was just going to say, I don't know if it was reading an Answer Man column or something else, but it does kind of remind me of, was it Manga Entertainment? Which one was bought by Stars and then it got floated around and then eventually Yeah. So, I mean, it does make me a little, like, wary, but I don't know that Manga Entertainment had the IP at the time that that happened, other than maybe Battle Angel Alita.
They had a really robust catalog.
Yeah.
And Manga had a really big catalog. A catalog of hits when Stars bought them. They still exploit that stuff. The Stars catalog was bought by somebody else, but all that stuff together, like, people still make money off of that catalog. And the Stars catalog is still seen as, you know, not bad. It has, like, Ghost in the Shell and Macross Plus in it and a bunch of other stuff that people recognize and remember. So, we'll see. I don't know. Interesting times. I don't know. We'll see.
So I just wanted to point out, I happened to glance over at Twitter and I forgot that. So this was a long time ago, but that Wind Waker AMV I joked about making did get pretty big, because that was back in a time where, like, it was harder to get footage of video games if you were an amateur. What's going on in the background?
Lindsay's messing around with something. It's okay.
Okay. Well,
I was closing the door. Sorry.
That's all right. But if you were, like, an amateur Joe Schmo, this was pre-Twitch and everything. Like, this was 2006 or whatever. Like, it was harder to get video game footage, but. Sam Leach, one of our writers, said, "I watched that Wind Waker AMV you made over and over again as a kid. I had no idea that that was you."
Wow.
So, weird connections happen. He's like, "I didn't know who you were, but that Wind Waker AMV was my shit." But yeah, that did get a lot of views back in the day. That was back when Google Video was a thing. More than YouTube. Like, temporarily, there was a brief window of time where Google Video had, like, was just as viable as an option as YouTube.
Yeah.
So right. It had a bunch of views there and on YouTube. Funny. Olden days. Good times.
All right. Actually, I think that just about wraps us up. So before we get going here, so we'll be back next week. I haven't announced that show yet. We'll see what it is. 2 weeks from now will be our Psycho Pass show. We're going to review Psycho Pass seasons 1, 2, and the movie. We're going to try and do that here on YouTube. So we'll see. Uh-huh. Okay. That's our show. Thanks, everyone, for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us here on YouTube. Like, subscribe, you know that stuff. Leave us a rating on iTunes, a review. We'd really appreciate it. We'll see y'all next week. Thanks, guys. Thanks for coming on and hanging out.
Bye-bye.
Bye.